The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan
on News Talk.
Before any of it, we'll kick things off as we do every day with our afternoon update, catching you up on all that has happened today. And joining me for the afternoon update, Lorcan Nyan, who's head of training at the Communications Clinic, columnist of the Sunday Independent, and Sarah Jane Toman, content editor at Evoke and the Inspire podcast. You're both very welcome.
Thank you.
Good to see you. Had you a good St. Patrick's Day weekend?
Yeah, it was quiet enough, but enjoyed it. Enjoyed every minute of it. I think the Six Nations kind of got things off to a nice start, didn't it?
It did. It certainly did.
Yeah.
You can tell, Lorcan, the kind of age differential in the office by the response. Everyone above a certain age, yeah, quiet enough.
Yeah.
Nice, quiet. It was lovely. Lovely, quiet St. Patrick's Day weekend.
I feel I'm bang in the middle, all right, of that, where I didn't.
That means he's above the line,
yeah,
but he hasn't accepted.
I haven't let myself acknowledge the fact that actually, like 3 or 4 years ago, I was in New York on St. Patrick's Day, and now I was with my 2-year-old this St. Patrick's Day. So I'm way over the line. But lovely St. Patrick's Day. Patrick's Day always kind of reveals something in me in that I think it's the best thing we do in terms of community, and it's amazing to see the communities and the work they put into their parades, and yet I never want to go. So I'm like, I know I value it and it's brilliant, but I'm like, keep me away from it though. So
really?
Reveal something in myself now, I think, that I like the idea of it, but then actually I fall way below my own standards.
I think that they've kind of upped their game though in recent years, especially with the new festival that's on down in Collins Barracks. This is just in Dublin now, but like I was reading about the other parades around the country and they sound like the best crack, like the Frank and Walters were the Grand Marshals for the one in Cork, and Cork's Lord Mayor Kieran McCarthy was dressed up as Willy Wonka and, you know, really kind of embracing all the kids and getting stuck into
the smaller the parade, the smaller the town, the more creative the floats.
I think so.
The more risque as well. They feel
some
they can
the floats,
get away with things.
Some of the floats this year are absolutely priceless. Sheila Shoiga was sharing on her Instagram the other day that one of the floats, I don't know where it was people dressed up as herself and Ivan Yates having a punch up at the back of a van.
Oh,
I think
good.
It was probably over the Irish language.
Kevin McGahern, the comedian, is going to be with me on the show tomorrow, actually, and talk about a few different things. But I suspect we might talk a bit about this because he was sharing some images of floats. I think his favourite one was, he's from Cavan, and the price of fertiliser has gone up, so fertiliser keeps getting stolen. So one of the floats was a load of lads with bags of fertiliser in the middle of of a flatbed trailer, and they just had balaclavas on and had rifles and were just pointing them at the crowd. Made up predominantly of kids.
Yeah. I mean, you have to hand it to them. Like, that's, as you said, on a shoestring budget, that's after getting us talking.
You can't do that in the Dublin parade.
No, we'd
be talking about it. It would have been headlines, rather than a nice example.
It's a bit of crap.
Yeah,
it's down the country.
Yeah.
Anyway, there was a real sense, and look, it's partly, I guess, down to the weather. The weather was pretty good, for most of the weekend. There was kind of changeable on, I think, on Saturday more than anything. But it got people out. Even the vintners, Lorcan, are happy. Even the vintners.
We suggesting that perhaps they're not always as happy as they could be.
You know, possibly not.
It's a good bellwether for everything went pretty well.
Isn't it? Yeah. Certainly in Kilkenny, I mean, the sense was that there was kind of queues around the block to get into
really
places. Yeah,
I do. I wasn't in Dublin city centre myself. I did go out for a few drinks locally because I'm very lucky to live in the foothills of the mountains where there are some deadly trad pubs, Mary Ploughboy, Buglers, that kind of thing. And they were jammed, absolutely jammed. People were coming out from town to actually go to the trad pubs and embrace the hoolies.
All right. Okay. So anyway, we've decided a resounding success at St. Patrick's Day, even if Lorcan's not having any of it. In abstract terms, he is. But I mean, you're not going. You're going. Well, how old is your daughter?
2. So I'm staying away from it until I get dragged.
I
realise at some point I'll have to do the whole rent to the parade.
Yeah,
and she'll be in it.
Are we going with the Camogie Club this year? Are we going with the Karate Club? Who are we going? Oh, you'll have all that ahead of you. That's one of the drawbacks of going with the kids. The kids love marching in the parade, but you don't actually see any of it. You only see the people in front of you and behind you. So I can tell you all about Kilkenny's inline roller skating hockey team because they were in front of us. But anything else at the parade, I don't know.
I didn't realise you were special enough to be in a parade.
Well,
I was never special enough to be in a parade.
They cast the net wider. When we were kids, this was the same for you. It was just the scouts.
The majorettes with the sticks.
You could go, but
I know down the country, everybody they could find was involved. It's like the GA club. Like if you're in the community, you're playing. Might be a C team, but you're playing. It was the same for the parade. If you're of a certain age, you were marching up and down that street.
I was never special enough.
The Defence Forces, the Fire Brigade, a few local characters and the Scouts when we were kids, and that was it. That was the parade. But now everyone, now they've lowered their standards. It's sad to see, really. The country's gone to hell.
There's one person I do miss from the Dublin parade, though. I don't know if you remember him for years, Paddy Drack.
Oh, yeah.
Like, literally from Tala, used to just dress up as Dracula randomly on St. Patrick. Dracula, Patrick's Day. Absolute character around town.
Yeah, there was always those individuals, and how would we put it kind of inoffensively, kind of characters. The type of person your mother described as, ah, sure, he's a harmless old fella.
And they'd hate to be called harmless.
Would always just be kind of walking in the parade.
Yeah, so
no one quite sure how they got into it or, like, you know, were they ever invited, but they would be there. And they'd be marching and they'd have their shamrock on their lapel. And
it's a good day for them, St. Patrick's Day. They're a part of the community rather than, I mean, the character within the community.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Anyway, listen, we have a part kind of St. Patrick's Day for the moment. I want to ask instead about, so Kieran Cannon, the latest Fine Gael TD to announce he's not going to run in the next election. And there's kind of two strands to this story. Larkin, there's the kind of the Fine Gael story that Ivan Yates, who was filling in for Pat this week, kind of was very focused on this morning, and the damage done to their party by so many people not running in the next election. But then what I kind of find more interesting is the reasons Kieran Cannon gave, which was just the kind of one of the reasons, the toxicity of the kind of the body politic and where they operate.
Yeah, and Kieran Cannon, I suppose, is the example of this now, because he has overtly called it out. You know, the others, you might say, well, they're aging into it anyway. Would they have gone anyway? But Kieran Cannon has basically said one of the reasons he's gone is he's been in it for 20 years and there's a coarseness and a toxicity that has seeped in. And I think we can all feel that. I mean, in the last 12 months, 2 years, like, it's quite visceral, actually. You can see it, that it has seeped in. And you can totally understand where he's coming from. If you're anyway on the fence, you'd wonder, why would you? And it's not just, I think, being a politician. It's being a good politician, really, being a vocal politician. Because if you put your head above the parapet and are actually active, you're going to get more of that coarseness, more of that toxicity and more of that abuse. So I was totally unsurprised to see it. I think we'll probably see more of it. And I think until we get to the point where we're able to look at it and say, right, OK, there is an edge to this, which is the real edge. It's the, you know, almost that anti-lockdown, anti-immigrant, you know, the cameras in the face coarseness that we do see. But there's another version of it as well that has seeped in that feeds that, which is just the anybody I disagree with is bad or is wrong or is purposefully trying to make my life worse. And it's the, you can't just be wrong about something. You have to be morally wrong about it. And the other side, like, and I think that element of it, which is wider spread than the cameras in the face shouting abuse, is what probably can be tackled better. You can't deal with the edge. You can stop it growing. But I do think we need to be able to disagree with anybody in politics. Like, 100%. You can look at anybody who's there, and I feel the vast majority of them do want to do well. Whether you agree with them politically or think they're acting in the right way, they want to do well. And there's too many of us, or too many people, who default to the other side is morally wrong rather than just misguided.
Who would do it? To kind of ask you the question that Laura composes. I mean, that's where you're left, isn't it?
I had a very interesting, on the Inspire podcast a couple of weeks ago, I had a really interesting chat with Ivana Bacik, right? And it just made me even more interested to read Kieran Cannon's statement today, where he actually said that women, you know, fare worse than men. And he called out the fact that social media is giving a voice to the voiceless, which is great in lots of respects. But, you know, the toxicity that he was talking about, it follows your home. It's in your family's lives. It's in their faces, because there's no switch off button with the social media. And the fact is, he said, you know, he feels that women are unfairly targeted, in particular in political circles. I don't know who'd be a politician. Like, it's a poison chalice, really, isn't it? I mean, you can't do right for doing wrong. And whatever your political standpoint is, or whatever party you support, you know, you should be able to have a debate without being absolutely vilified and without having your family dragged into it. And It's frightening.
Yeah, and I think it's a really important point, Larkin, you raise about kind of the less extreme end of the criticism and that kind of tribalism that seeps into it almost. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That it doesn't almost matter what that guy says. He's my guy and you're not my guy, so I am automatically opposed to it. At the same time, the extreme end of it, and I know what you're saying. I mean, you can't kind of legislate for kind of the extreme element in society to a degree, but that is what puts people off. You know what I mean? The idea of, particularly if you know, young, we're all talking about kids, our own kids. If you have young kids at home, you're considering getting into it, and you think, hold on, are one of these lunatics going to turn up at my home, standing outside the driveway?
Which
they
has
have
happened
at Simon Harris's house and Paul Murphy's house, and I've got young kids in there, and all they're doing is they want you to walk outside, and then they'll hold a camera in your face, they'll scream abuse at you. It doesn't matter how you respond. you know, don't respond, do respond, say something clever, say nothing at all. All they want is content. Yeah. They're just creating content.
It's frightening. But like, at the same time, you know, like Kieran Cannon today, like when he was making his, when he announced his decision, he did say that he's going to keep working for the betterment of his community and stuff like that. He's just not going to be in the political sphere anymore. And I'm sure there's a lot of people who kind of take that approach now, that they're kind of saying, it's not worth it. Like, I'll operate in, I don't know, education. I will help my community in, you know, social work or something like that. It's not putting everyone off. Like, we had Nina Carberry come out last night, the champion jockey. She's now running for European elections for Fine Gael. So it's, you know, there are still people out there. It remains to be seen whether she sticks with it or not, now that she's kind of put her, nailed her colours to the terrace, so to speak. But, you know, it's not a job I'd do. I don't think, I know a few people who grew up in families who have political parents and stuff like that, and cheapers, they had to put up with a lot over the years.
Yeah.
And that was years ago.
And I think there's an extra layer to it. It's not just them showing up outside your house, which is obviously like a horrendous thing to be worried about. But I would think if you got, you know, if you got kids or family members or whatever, you also don't want them seeing you being called A, B and C every single day online, on Facebook groups,
yeah.
on, you know, that like no matter what you do, that abuse being there. And it's a small, like a relatively small number of people who engage in that. But when you're the target of it, you know, a relatively small number feels very, very loud.
And every vessel can make a lot of noise, you know?
And it feels like a groundswell, or because the other side isn't there. You know, like there's not the other side of, well, the 80% people saying, yeah, you're great, because you don't get that necessarily. So, I mean, obviously social media is a part of it, but I do think it's probably seeped into us culturally.
Where do you think the kind of the other strand of all this that you highlighted initially, the kind of the less extreme, but arguably equally as toxic in the long run, version of kind of criticism. What do you put that down to? When did it start? Where did it start? Why?
It's probably always been there to a degree. We probably hear more of it. And I do think as people get more tribal and as we get more divided, and that has happened. I mean, we tend to think of that as, oh, that happens in America and the UK. It has happened here as well. Like, even as a simple example, and it's a small example of it, but I found the whole reaction to the deposit rental scheme, the bottles, bizarre. Like, it's a small change. I don't know if
it's a pain in the backside,
yeah,
Larkin.
I don't know if it's the right thing or the wrong thing. It seems to be working. But people were so angry about it as a concept.
They were like,
they are trying to ruin my life by making me hold on to my bottles and charging me the 15 cent. And I'm sure there's people now saying, oh, it is a big deal. I think if you're getting angry, not just saying, ah, that's a bit wrong, I'll talk out against it, but getting actually viscerally angry in yourself at something like that, is that not a sign that we ought, like, that there's an element of, we need to chill
Calm a little bit
and assume okay intentions on behalf of the vast majority of people, if only for yourself, if only to stop yourself getting that
overheating,
anger,
yeah.
overheating every day.
Do you think, and I don't get too lost in the weeds here, but I mean, are you describing a kind of a growing number of people, or just a cohort of people who get attention and get airtime, and that the vast majority of people are probably still falling into that kind of,
I think, the
category of who acknowledge, yes, fine, I don't agree with what you're saying, but that's absolutely fine. I acknowledge kind of your public service.
I think there is still the vast majority, but it's a smaller majority.
Okay.
I think there is a growing swell in that second cohort. Just see, it's people who are scrolling and seeing things online and then immediately getting angry about it. And I think we've all experienced that consistently. So I think that's grown, but I've no metrics to prove that.
Unplug the internet.
The best place at the best of times.
But then St. Patrick's Day community spirit, you see
there.
So that's the real learning.
Exactly. Can I ask before you go, just about, because we're going to come back to it a bit later this hour, the kind of ongoing situation with tents around the International Protection Office. So, Sergio, what's the latest on this? Because I'm conscious there'll be a lot of people maybe tuning back into the real world after the long weekend, and they're kind of vaguely aware people were moved, some have come back.
Okay, so 30-second synopsis. Saturday, they moved around 200 people who were looking for international protection from tents outside the offices of the International Protection Accommodation Services in buses up to a place called Cruxling in Saggart, which was, I don't know if you remember, a couple of weeks ago, there's an old nursing home there that had been set on fire because rumours had gone around that it was going to be used as an accommodation centre for refugees. These people were brought there. They were told that there was going to be toilets, showers, food, facilities to plug in their phones, that kind of thing. They arrived to find out they were sleeping in tents there again. So a lot of them got back on buses and came back into Dublin city centre, only to find that their tents, thousands of euros worth of tents and stuff like that, had already been removed. And the street thankfully it had been bleached clean because it had been used as a urinal and a toilet, an open toilet for quite a while, and was pretty disgusting. But yeah, they were basically moving these people without any support, according to these the asylum seekers, moving them to this remote place with no support systems in place, and people, charities and volunteers who were going to try and assist them over the weekend were being denied access to the site. So a lot of them have already come back into Dublin city centre.
I was reading, I think, Pat Leahy's piece in the Irish Times, and apologies to whoever wrote it if it wasn't him, Larkin, was kind of suggesting that the government were kind of damned if they did and damned if they didn't in terms of moving them. You know, had nothing been done, there'd have been kind of plenty of column inches given to kind of, you know, the juxtaposition of this situation on Main Street and the St. Patrick's Day celebrations, and why the hell didn't the government do something?
Well, it is one of those issues that does not have an easy answer. I think you always know those issues when the opposition isn't providing an easy answer. You know, when the opposition doesn't have the easy to propose, here's what we should do solution, you know it's really, really complicated. But I live 60 seconds from there. So I walk past Mount Street every single day, home twice a day, maybe four or five times a day. And like, you know, you even mentioned the charging of the phones. Like for the last number of months, there's been one chair in front of the Dublin bike stand because that has a USB. And they've, like, the men there have just had to charge their phone there and circle in around it. And I just think when you walk past every day, I don't know the solution to this, but like, we have to be able to do better. Like when you see that every single day, I include myself in that. Like I'm not doing anything about it either, but surely we have to be able to do better. But then when you look at it from a political point of view, every single time anything gets proposed, the opposition to it is louder than the support for it. So it's very, very difficult for politicians to fix this without the public support to it. So I don't know what the solution is, but I defy anybody to walk past there and to see the tents and to see the community that they have around it and just think that we have to be able to do something better. But it's probably not move it away from the public eye. And that's obviously part of the reason why it's come back. And I think rightfully so. We have to stare at it.
Well,
because otherwise,
I would live up close to Crooksling, up the mountains. Like it is, it's miles out of town, and it is colder. A lot of people were saying it's colder up there. I can't understand how these people were expected to sleep in tents. There's no lighting. They said there's bus service is going to be provided going in. It's just with all the empty buildings around Baggot Street and like closer and in the centre of everything. And I just can't understand.
Well, moving them to a site of a nursing home that had been burnt down because it had been suggested they might be moved to it. I mean, kind of encapsulates the kind of nonsense that the government have to deal with and they're trying to deal with in this front.
And look, it's obviously symbolic of a much wider, much more complicated issue, but sometimes you need these symbolic moments to everybody, and you can't just say politicians or government, everybody needs to be looking and say, hang on, who do we want to be and what do we want to do?
Frank and Dublin's having none of it. Politicians have only themselves to blame for the toxicity, as they've overseen a dysfunctional political system since independence, and the people are finally waking up to it. People who have social media accounts as somebody else should have to register using official photo ID. It might stop some of it. Another listener says, after living in the States for 20 years, I think the problem there and here is that people don't know how to simply disagree anymore. 087 1400 106. Keep those texts coming. Larkin Nyan is the head of training at the Communications Clinic, columnist with the Sunday Independent. Larkin, thank you. And Sarah Jane Tobin is a content editor with Evoke. And you'll hear her on the Inspire podcast as well. Sarah Jane, thank you very much for joining me here in studio.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy
with Nissan.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.